Welcome into another edition of the Dan and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick, he is Dan, and for this edition of the podcast, we are joined by the legend, Brian Snow, notably absent from the live podcast at Dana's.
Yeah, you know, that drive, it just wasn't appealing to me.
Wasn't your brother there? So at least there was like a Snow family representative on site.
I'd say we got the better half of that deal.
If my brother was there or not, I'll be honest.
He was there, and I'd say we made out better in that deal by getting the better Snow. But honestly, what did you do that was so much better than the live podcast? Because at one point you were going to be there, then like 12 hours later you were not going to be there, and this is all like just the day before the show. What was going on in Snow's life that it was so tumultuous over those 24 hours?
As you know, I have commitment issues and laziness issues. So I don't like to commit to doing things that involve like me actually having to move. And yeah, moving just wasn't going to happen when I thought about it on Friday night, drive down. So I just stayed in Indy and probably got drunk.
Well, by contrast, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of you who did get off your asses and come out to Dana Gardens 2 weeks ago for the live podcast. I thought it was a pretty great event. It was good to see a lot of familiar faces that Rick and I have encountered in New York or at games in the past. So it was a cool event. Obviously, big thanks to Mario Mercurio and Chris Mack for coming. I thought the interview with Chris was pretty cool. Some interesting insights into players on the team and some tactical issues. I think, Rick, you said it's pretty tough to believe that there's too many other, like, high major coaches who would show up at a random dive bar at noon on a Saturday and just basically talk about whatever people want to talk about for an hour. So really appreciate that from Chris.
Especially if anyone has heard our podcast before and knew we were the ones that he was coming to do the interview with. Like, think about the things we've said in the past however many years. I called Tom Iser a big sex guy on a podcast. And Chris Mack came to a dive bar on a Saturday that he was off after leaving one of his girls' tournament games. I mean, like, yeah, that's pretty ridiculous to believe. I can't imagine there's too many guys. Like, someone mentioned Calipari, maybe.
No chance.
So anybody who might have missed it, although I don't know why you would have, make sure you go back and listen to that, because there was a lot more to discuss on that one than there is going to be today. So, Rick, we should probably just get into it.
Absolutely. I had a blast at that. I appreciate it. And I think you missed this, but definitely big thanks to BJ, too. For hosting that event and making the donation to the Mack Family Foundation. Good event all the way around, and we couldn't have done it without any of those people that we mentioned. So appreciate all you guys coming out. Let's get into the only big topic that we've got to talk about, and that is Trayvon Blewett announcing that he is coming back. This is where things looked like they were leaning the last 2 weeks, and then or the last 2 weeks before he had to draw his name out. And then maybe 24, 48 hours outside of that, things got kind of weird. Everyone I had been talking to that was 100% convinced he was coming back were like, we'll see. Like, all of a sudden, weren't sure. So it got kind of interesting right up until that last day. And then that last day, I posted on the board, you know, kind of what I was hearing, and it sounded like everyone was confident he would be back, especially when he canceled that workout with the Knicks. And lo and behold, he did announce that he is coming back. Guys, just initial thoughts on what this means for, you know, what the team would have been like without a Trayvon Blewett and what it means now that he is coming back.
Before we get there, I kind of am curious, Snow, if you could kind of walk us through what you were hearing over the course of this process, because I know you're real close to the Blewett family. Like, how did you think this decision came about? I don't think we've talked about it really in any detail since about 3 weeks ago.
Yes. So I guess I'll take the long version here like I usually do. You know, when he made this decision last year at this time, it was basically like the question was he going to walk on senior day as a junior or not, because he ain't coming back. Like, everybody was on board with it. You know, there was no delusion on Xavier's end. It was like, we got Trayvon for 3 years. So that was basically, you know, obviously what Rick and I put on the board. And then starting about January, I talked to one of his trainers and someone who's pretty close to him. And Trayvon starts talking about, is telling them about he wants to come back and have a Josh Hart year. And I don't know if wants to come back, but is thinking of coming back and having a Josh Hart year. And by the end of the season, it was like, I think in Trayvon's heart, he knew he was going to be back at Xavier. But he still wanted to do the go through the process and do it all. And certainly his family really wanted him to go through the process. But from what I had been hearing over the last month, it was Trayvon's going to come back unless his dad makes him go pro. And his dad was never going to make him go pro, but I think his dad did feel like, all right, Trayvon, like, are we going to start making money at any point in time here? Like, you're 23 years old, son. But Trayvon in the end and his dad in the end and his mom, you know, they just all decided, let's come back, enjoy one more year, you know, at Xavier being the man and doing all that and everything. And they made the decision when they made it. But I don't think it was ever like a back and forth situation. It was just like at the end, you're like, is this kid really going to do this? And I think that's what gave people pause. Because this would be the first time where Trayvon's kind of like told his father, like, this is what I'm doing, accept it. And his father was always fine with Trayvon doing it, just Trayvon's never done that.
Yeah, and I think, Snow, kind of the interesting part there with that dynamic, you know, with Trayvon and his dad and just everything we had been hearing is that Trayvon, it didn't sound like there was too much questioning of the process for him. It sounded like he had kind of made up his mind down the stretch, and he knew exactly what he was doing. And they're really like all the stuff he was saying, maybe with Instagram posts or to the media, it was maybe just to throw people off a little bit and keep the mystery going and maybe keep people talking about him. The other thing I'm interested to hear from you, how much do you think the little run-in with the Carmel police had to do with the decision? Do you think it impacted it at all?
The crime of the century.
Yeah. I do, because I think it limited his number of workouts that he got. And when you have a kid like Trayvon – who doesn't fit the mold of an NBA player. He doesn't look like an NBA player. If you give the NBA any reason not to take you, they're going to jump on it. And he gave them a reason not to take him in the second round. So I think it did play a little bit of a role. And NBA teams did communicate that to Trayvon. Like, hey, you're going to have to prove to us that this was just a one-time stupid thing. Again, we don't care if you smoke weed. We care if you get caught with it. And so it's like, hey, you're going to have to prove to us that this was just a one-time thing. And that's basically what happened.
So going back to your original question, Rick, I think that the I think that Trayvon returning is – I don't think you can overstate how important it is for Xavier. I mean, without him, you know, going into next year – it was going to be probably a transitional year for Xavier in a lot of ways. I mean, obviously you would have JP back, you would have Quentin Gooden back, you would have Sean O'Mara back, Tyreke Jones, guys who have proven themselves, guys who've got big minutes down the stretch. But when you take away, you know, your top scorer and the guy who really emerged as an extremely good player in the clutch, their go-to guy down the stretch, they necessarily would have taken a step back. And so, I mean, I don't know. I guess from my perspective, this takes them from – this is the difference between Xavier. You're looking at maybe a season that might look, in terms of numbers, similar to last year. 500 in the league, you know, maybe making the tournament to now a legitimate, you know, I guess it depends on how high you are on them and where you see other teams in the nation. But – certainly a top 20 team, so it's a huge boost to Xavier.
Yeah, one thing I'm going to be interested in is knowing the personality of Chris Mack, and just in general of this team. I really expect them to embrace expectations and almost play up what is expected of them. Like, it would not shock me if when it gets to the media portion in the preseason, where you hear them say like, we expect to have a high seed. We expect to compete in the Final Four. Like, this is why we're here. This is the group we have. So I'll be interested to see if they do that, like I think they will, or if they kind of downplay it.
Well, here's a big part of that. One of the people that they're going to be giving the microphone to a lot this year is one Jonathan Paul Mekura. And so I completely think what you just said is going to be true, because there's no other way that kid will speak.
Yeah. I mean, just JP, he definitely not a big fan of the media. I just think he doesn't like Rick, but
that's a fact.
certainly not a big fan of media obligations. So, but I mean, I just wonder if JP and Trayvon and especially Chris, if they just kind of say, like, we expect to go to the Final Four, like, this is why we came here, this is why we stayed, this is everything. Like, if we don't make it to the Final Four, it's a disappointment. Maybe not say it that strongly, but I kind of am going to expect that type of, I don't know if bravado is the right word, but bravado going into the year.
Do you think there is, I'll throw this out to both of you, do you think there is any issues for this team early with, like, any type of power struggle between a Trayvon and JP, or like, do they have to figure things out again? Like, are both guys ramping it up a little bit? Maybe JP thought, okay, Trey and Ed are leaving, this was going to be my team. So I'm not saying that is going to happen, but is there any concern that maybe they have to figure out how to play again, despite the fact that they really had this thing rolling at the end of last year with a very similar personnel group?
Personally, I say no, because neither of those two need the basketball to dominate like Ed did. I think that was the issue this year, was you had Ed, who dominated the basketball and was the best talent, and then you had Trey, who was the best player, and they were trying to figure that out. Since neither JP nor Trey are going to dominate the ball, whether it's Q, whether it's Paul, whoever the heck is dribbling, he's just going to pass it. So I think it's an easier 1-2 punch in determining, like, Batman Robin than it was last year.
Yeah, and I would say, especially in the last, let's say, 2 months of the season, when you think about, you know, Trey hitting the shot to beat Seton Hall, scores 40 at UC, keeps him in that game pretty much single-handedly, hits the shot to beat Butler in the tournament, hits the, you know, goes crazy in the second half against Maryland, obviously is huge against both Arizona and Florida State. I think he emerged as the obvious, like, sort of alpha dog, the guy who's got the ball in his hands at the end of the game. I don't know that that was the case before that. Like, when Sumner was healthy at the end of last year, you kind of saw those issues for Xavier at the end of games, trying to figure out who was going to have the ball, who was going to use those last few possessions. I think that decision has been made at this point. And so I actually don't expect as many sort of growing pains or transitional pains as we've seen in early seasons of the past. I think this is a team that ought to be ready to roll come the second week in November.
Okay, Snow, so I'll put you on the spot. Is this Chris Mack's best chance to compete for a Final Four?
Yes, no question. And I'll be perfectly honest, I've communicated that to the head coach.
I'm sure he appreciates your critiquing and your analysis.
Well, I didn't critique. There was no critiquing. It was basically like, this is your best chance to get to the Final Four as long as the coaches don't screw it up. I probably specifically said as long as Steele doesn't screw it up. But, you know, as I said, that I think there's no doubt this is his best chance to get to a Final Four, because you have experience everywhere and versatility throughout the roster.
Yeah, and also you're bringing in two, even the new guys who you expect to get rotation minutes from the beginning, who I would see as Scruggs and Marshall would probably be in that rotation from day one, with some of the other guys having a chance to earn time. I mean, those guys are at a higher level of recruit. They seem to have more college ready games than maybe some of the young guys Xavier's tried to blood in the past. I think a lot of it is going to boil down to, can Xavier shoot the ball from the outside enough? I think if Trayvon left, that was going to be a legitimate question about this team. But, you know, Trey, in those last 2 months, he started shooting. And as he started shooting, it opened everything up for everybody else. And all of a sudden, guys like, you know, more role guys like Malcolm Bernard, Quentin Gooden, they were feeling more confident stepping into jump shots because they were wide open. So I think it solves so many problems for this team coming back. And the other nice thing about adding two guys like Scruggs and Marshall is you're adding defenders. You're adding guys you can bring off the bench that can, and with Quentin Gooden coming back for a second year, you got a lot of guys who can really defend. And so I like what Snow just said about versatility up and down the roster. I mean, you think about being able to mix Kaiser Gates in there in key defensive possessions. You've obviously got Tyreek, who demonstrated at the end of the season that he can be a pretty good defender. There's just so much versatility and so many options for Chris Mack. It doesn't feel like he's going to have to put Band-Aids on different areas of the team the way he has in the past.
Well, and one of the things – hold on, so I'll let you get in there in a second. One of the things that stood out to me that Chris Mack had talked about at the live podcast when I asked him, you know, did you see a little bit of a change in the way JP and Trayvon were playing in terms of trying to create more off the dribble? And also when things got tight and they felt they needed to spark the offense, did you see them trying to create more plays instead of just trying to jack up a tough shot? And he said he did. And another thing he said about that was – especially relating to JP, he's not a guy who's going to beat you with his first step, but he is a guy who's great at attacking bad closeouts. And I think what you have in your two guards that are going to be handling the ball a lot next year, and Quentin Gooden and Paul Scruggs, are guys that are going to get into the lane and make plays. And what that will do is get defenses collapsing and having to recover to shooters, and you'll constantly have guys closing out on JP and Trayvon, I think. And if they get that opportunity where guys are coming out at them, I think they can get into the lane and create more plays just like they did in the tournament last year. And this offense is a lot more difficult to guard when they're playing like that instead of only being jump shooters.
Mm-hmm. And what I was going to say is this year, except for when Jordan Crawford was on campus, and that would be Chris's first year as a head coach. And I know people are going to say Tu Holloway, and I love Tu, but he wasn't like necessarily like that dude who you've got the best player in the league.
Right.
Maybe in the A-10 he was, but if Tu was in the Big East, you're not saying like Tu's the best player in the league. This year, Xavier, when it's tough, they have the best player in the league. Certainly the best perimeter player in the league. Maybe some people say Jalen Brunson. I'm taking Trayvon Blewett over Jalen Brunson. So when it comes down to it in March, you look at the Wisconsin game, you're like relying on redshirt freshman Edmund Sumner, Jalen Reynolds, who's a bit of a wild card, and, you know, Miles Davis, who's just kind of a really, really good role player. Now it's, okay, I'm going to the best player in the league, Trayvon Blewett, going to a potential first team all-league kid, JP McCura. Like, there's just, like, dudes there in those tough situations that make the difference between winning and losing that one game in the tournament to me.
Anything else that stands out to you guys about Trayvon coming back that you want to get to before we move on here?
I mean, I think you made the point already, but if Trayvon comes back and produces anywhere near what he did last year, he's going to end his career as a second leading scorer at Xavier. And that almost certainly means his number is going to be in the rafters, which is a cool thing. I mean, it's a nice byproduct of his decision to stay. It obviously – that's not money in the bank, and as we talked about, you know, that those sort of intangible rewards maybe don't play into the decision quite as much as some of us would like to think that they do, but that's a cool thing, and that's something that he's got to look forward to, and it's something he'll have, and he'll have for the rest of his life, assuming, you know, things go well.
Well, and like you said, does this matter to Trayvon and his family? Maybe not. But just in terms of the history of Xavier basketball and the way fans want to talk about it and the way media members talk about it, this fits the story really well because he was such an important recruit for Xavier to land and such a big deal that they were able to get him, I thought. It really kind of signified a shift in where Xavier was at in the hierarchy of college basketball recruiting. And for him to be able to stick it out and become a true legend at Xavier, it seems right to me. I think it plays well.
Here's what I'll say this. I think the last time Trayvon and I communicated in any manner was, I think after Arizona, I sent him a text that said congrats, and he said thanks. So I haven't talked to him since God knows how long. You know, I talk to his father all the time, but if I see Trayvon, you know, at team camp or whatever, I'll tell him, like, you made yourself – you might not realize it, but you made yourself a lot of money by coming back. And it has nothing to do with the NBA or the D League or Europe. He made himself a lot of money just in future everything by being that guy at Xavier. And I don't know if he realizes that now. I know I wouldn't have realized it at 23, but he did.
I would tend to agree with that. All right. The little bit of other news we had going on in the past few weeks was it broke right as we were doing the podcast with Chris Mack that Xavier actually will be playing in the Gavitt Games this year, and they will be going to Wisconsin to do it. After we were basically told last year, I don't know when it ever got publicly reported necessarily, but we all kind of know that Xavier was supposed to be playing Wisconsin at Xavier last year. You'd be hard-pressed to tell me that Wisconsin didn't think Trayvon Blewett would be returning and the way these things worked out. But I guess, guys, just thoughts about how the Gavitt Games have worked out so far for Xavier.
I mean, there's no doubt it hasn't been ideal. I mean, but that said, you got to win against Michigan. That helped their profile in terms of maybe earning a 2 seed when they might have only had a 3. And, you know, now they've got another quality game against, excuse me, against Wisconsin, which, let's be honest, is better than Utah. So it hadn't been all bad. Sure, you want home games, but now there's some debate on the whole home game thing and how many are going to happen. But they're still going to get home games out of this deal and likely against Wisconsin in 2018-19. So, it's short term, it hasn't been ideal, but long term, I think everyone can look and say it's not going to be a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the downside to it is what Mari has talked about is, because it's made for TV and because the dates are not real flexible, it kind of hampers Xavier's ability not only to build a schedule but also to sequence the games in an appropriate way, which he always harps on being a really important thing. But yeah, I mean that at Michigan game was a great road test for a team that had I don't think we were 100% sure on at that point. I thought we all believed that they were pretty good, but for them to go to Michigan,
two.
Yeah, I mean to go win by 18 points after weathering a pretty good run in the second half. I mean, pretty impressive win. And, you know, this Wisconsin team, you know, they're not going to be great next year, but they have a couple of really good players. They're obviously well coached. They're obviously a program with a lot of history. So it's going to be a good test for Xavier on the road. And, you know, going to Madison's a little bit easier than going to Salt Lake City. So it alleviates maybe a road trip that would have been, problematic in the way we talk about sequencing of games and so forth. I do want to say, though, that for those that weren't at the live podcast, Rick kind of pulled a gotcha question because somebody ran up to the table with a John Rothstein tweet about this Gavitt Games thing. And Chris Mack was it definitely was one of those things, like if Chris Mack was Sean Spicer, he would have disappeared into the bushes at that point. I think that was a pretty funny moment at the live podcast.
Yeah, no question. And I would agree, Snow, that overall the Gavitt Games are a net positive. Like, it's better to be in them and play in some of these series than not. I mean, you get a game at Michigan, you get a game at Wisconsin. That's probably better than not playing those games. And it's not working out terribly for Xavier, especially since they won the game at Michigan. If they win the game at Wisconsin, everyone will be happy about that too. And it'll be a lot of vindication for what happened in the NCAA tournament a couple years ago. But Xavier is not happy about the way things are going. And I think the reason for that is because last year they had communicated to the Big East office that, you know, here's the only date we can play. It can't be the Tuesday. It has to be the Monday of that week because we are leaving for, at the time it was going to be Puerto Rico, ended up being Orlando, but we're not going to be playing on that Tuesday and then leaving early Wednesday morning for our flights. It's just setting ourselves up for a bad week. Well, they say that's fine up until really late in the process, you know, that summer, they tell them, oh, actually, we're not going to be able to do that. We're giving the game to Creighton for nothing. And then so they tell them again in advance of this the way things were working out and that they weren't going to be playing, and that's fine for 13 months. And then out of nowhere, they're being told they have to go play at Wisconsin. I mean, that was just happening the week of the live podcast. They had been informed that because you and I had been reporting on the board that they definitely were not going to be playing in the Gavitt games, because that's what we had been told up until that point. So I think the way that things keep breaking down, that somehow the Big East team keeps getting bullied year after year and whatever these negotiations are, isn't sitting well with Xavier. And I also think the fact that when you look at it now, they've basically had a game taken away for them, because what it was supposed to be is everyone sits out 2 years of the 8-year deal, right? So you're supposed to play 6 games, yeah. 3 home, 3 away. Xavier now is not going to get 3 home games out of how this works, from what I've been told. So I think that's the issues that Xavier has with the Gavitt games. Not that it's not going to be an okay thing in terms of for their profile and everything, but just the way it's been handled and the scheduling of it all.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly not happy now. I just think 3 years from now, and we'll see if they don't get that home game back. I've talked to a few people with knowledge, and they think that's not really possible. But we'll see.
I mean, here's the thing. Nobody is going to be complaining about this if, say, you know, next season we're talking about the schedule and Indiana is coming to CentOS Center.
I would bet on Wisconsin coming to CentOS Center, personally.
So, I mean, probably these things – I mean, I doubt that either of those teams would be assigned a road game at Xavier, but, I mean, it's conceivable, and if that happens, I mean, nobody's – the complaints are going to be – are going to disappear, I think, in a hurry.
As
so
I said,
we just need to wait and see how it plays out.
For the 2018 Gavitt games, I would fully expect the Wisconsin Badgers to be playing in the CentOS Center.
Interesting. All right. Well, if you guys don't have anything else about that, I think there's a few recruiting things to kind of touch on. And the first one I'd start with is a name we've been talking about on the message board now for a little while. Snow, you brought him up when it was announced that he's transferring. He's got his full release. Jalen Coleman Lands is leaving Illinois. He just finished his sophomore season, so he'll have to sit out a year, and then he'll have 2 years left. He's a shooter, so he certainly fits. I mean, I think that's the only way you would describe his game at this point of his development. And he would certainly fit what Xavier is looking to add to the roster in the next few years. What can you tell us about where Jalen Coleman Lands stands?
Yeah, he will. His dad just told me right before on air that he's going to visit DePaul on Sunday. Then I believe there's a good chance he visits Notre Dame next week, and then I think there's a good chance he visits Xavier after that. When exactly those dates are for Notre Dame and Xavier, I don't think are firmly set yet, but I think that's kind of the plan, is they're going to visit those three schools over the next 10 days or so and go from there. Of course, there's a possibility he could commit to DePaul on his visit. You know, you never know. But they are the first visit, and it will be on Sunday. And from my understanding, those are the three main schools right now. You know, TCU's involved a little bit. Ryan Miller was at – he's an assistant at TCU. He recruited Jalen really hard coming out when he was at UNLV. So they're involved a little bit. Creighton's involved a little bit. But I think it's going to come down to DePaul, Notre Dame, or Xavier. You hear differing reports on who leads and who doesn't. So we'll just have to see. One thing that's interesting here is Jalen will require surgery wherever he goes. And from what Jalen told me, it's like a 3 or 4 month recovery. It stems back to when he had a stress fracture in his leg his freshman year. I don't know that everything's fully right from that. I don't, you know, I'm obviously not a doctor. I don't know how all the crap works.
You just play one on this podcast typically.
Yeah, just play one on this podcast. So he will miss time during the year. I would assume, you know, this would be like I'm going to get to whatever school I go to, get the surgery, and then be back practicing January, February. But I, you know, that is one thing to consider, is he is going to have leg surgery wherever he goes during his sit out year.
Rick, if Xavier does, it seems like getting a player like Jalen Coleman Lands, who would be a sit and then play two, wouldn't be bad, because it would kind of even up the classes a little bit. Xavier's kind of got is in this weird cycle where it seems like they have a huge class every 3 or 4 years, and then relatively a few number of the interim years. But I mean, what is the calculus sort of, do we take a guy like this versus bringing in a shooting guard, a high school prospect, like, for example, C.J. Frederick? I mean, is that the calculus that they're working through right now? Do you get that sense?
I mean, probably, except for the fact that it's – I don't think it's too difficult to add up. Jalen Coleman-Lanz has proven he can shoot the ball at the high major level already. And when you already have that – I mean, like, at least that skill has been proven. Now, are there things you'd like to see him round out about his game and improve on? Certainly. But he can play at this level, and he can make shots at a high level if you put him in the right situation. And Xavier is kind of looking for a specialist-type guy. They're looking for a guy that can just knock shots down. Would they like to get a guy that's more well-rounded? Sure. But I think it's pretty easy. Jalen Coleman-Lanz is probably a take-him-if-you-can-get-him type of recruit for Xavier. That would be my opinion, at least. Now, I could be off on that, and there are some guys that they're really in there with that are talented prospects in 2018. So maybe that's making it a little bit more difficult, but I tend to think it's probably not too hard on them in terms of making that decision.
Yeah, I think it's pretty straightforward. And keep in mind, there's going to be a lot of – what are they going to be at this year scholarship-wise, like 12 or something?
Yeah.
And you got, what, four guys leaving, I think? Four or five leaving? So you're going to have plenty of scholarships to offer in 18 no matter what. So getting a older, proven shooter isn't necessarily the worst idea in the world.
Well, let's talk about the 2018 class. What are you guys hearing? Where, you know, we've bounced around a lot of names in this 2018 class. Do you guys feel like the staff is – moving towards some specific targets that that they're starting to look for commitments from?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you ask, they're trying to get one or two kids done before July. I think Travion Williams is definitely someone they're pushing hard with right now. Then I talked to someone over the weekend and last weekend, and he told me that Jerome Hunter has expressed that he thinks Xavier leads over Michigan for Jerome Hunter, and that's certainly a top target. Darius Baisley's been incredible during the spring. Xavier's going to likely push pretty hard for him. Then you've got Cole Swider, who they – you know, Cole's not going to decide till after July, but they want to get him as bad as humanly possible. Noah Locke is a kid Pegues is in with that's not going to decide till after July, but, you know, they're really pushing for him. So, you know, they got a lot of guys in the hopper right now that they're really, really focused in on. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, which guys they can get to pull the trigger, and especially if they can get one or two of them to do it before July.
Snow, there's three names, and you mentioned two of them that interest me the most right now, and I've taken the most questions about, particularly at the live podcast. I talked to a couple guys after it was over there for a little bit at Dana's, and these were the names that were coming up the most. Where do things stand with Darius Baisley, in your opinion, for starters?
I think he's going to go through July.
Obviously, he decommitted from Ohio State. He was committed to Ohio State. He decommitted in the spring, and so here we are.
I think he's going to go through July. Louisville offering's big. I think he's going to visit Indiana in June. I assume they'll offer, and I think that'll be something. I don't expect Cincinnati to get involved. He's darn sure not going back to Ohio State. So I tend to think, you know, Louisville, Kentucky, if they show interest, I don't anticipate that happening. You know, Indiana and then Xavier, I think, would probably be the three schools with the best chance at the moment. And Syracuse as well, excuse me, Syracuse 4. But I think he wants to stay closer to home. And as we know, Cincinnati kids love the city of Cincinnati. So Xavier's going to have a great shot. But again, they're in there with a whole lot of other combo forwards. So how those dominoes fall will be interesting.
Yeah, and one of those other guys, although I think this is a situation where you'd probably easily look at taking both. Cole Swider is a name that we've been talking about really, you know, that they're in there heavily with since – the last high school season, and it's just been building up and building up. He hit the spring and he was killing it early in the spring. He's continued to play well to this point with AAU. What are you hearing about Cole Swider? Do you think this is getting to a point where he might really blow up and push past Xavier's level, or do you think they're still in there really good with him?
Now, this is an interesting thing because depending on who you listen to, before Cole narrowed his list to eight, Duke called him and said, like, hey, we'd like to recruit you. And Cole said, well, are you offering me? And he said, no. He's like, well, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to consider you guys. I've got my list of eight. And some people say it was like a don't even bother. Some people say, well, if Duke wants to get involved, they'll still be able to get involved. I don't know the answer to that question. But I think Cole's pretty set on his group of schools right now. Maybe if Duke comes in, that changes things. But I think that's probably the only school that can change things. Villanova's in there. Miami's in there. Providence is in there. Indiana's working hard. But pretty much the consensus right now is Xavier's the number one school on this list.
The third guy that's, again, we've been talking about for a long time now, Luke Murray. It's been one of his, maybe his top, you know, recruit that we've heard about since he got to Xavier, Ayo Dosunmu. You put it best, I think. I never liked the player comparisons, but he's very similar to Samaje Christen. You just cannot keep him out of the lane. He's jet quick with the ball in his hands. He's a good finisher. What's the latest you're hearing on him?
He also doesn't dribble with his left hand, so it's perfect. Ayo's interesting because the top two schools are Illinois and Xavier, and neither depth chart is all that appealing. And I keep waiting for that to be a factor with him. But I genuinely think this kid does not care at all who's on the roster in front of him. Like, publicly, privately, everybody who knows him says he doesn't care. He thinks he's going to play. So I keep looking at it like, okay, well, if this kid doesn't care, you know, it is what it is. And again, you know, I think he's got the best relationship with the Xavier staff. I mean, I think he likes Illinois, but – you talk to a lot of people, they think, you know, and it's right now, this is not necessarily a prediction of a commitment, but that Xavier's the team to beat. So I would watch NC State there. They have a lot of playing time to – I know he said I in one breath said he didn't care, but they have a lot of playing time to offer. They, you know, Kevin Keats is a really good recruiter, knows his AAU and high school coach as well. So I would take a look at NC State and maybe think they could crack in there. But right now it seems like it's Xavier, Illinois. And this kid just does not care at all about the depth chart, like not even a little bit.
What's the operative number for 2018 right now, do we think? Is it four? Is it four plus maybe Jalen Coleman lands? I mean, where do you guys see that number being?
I mean, they'll have five spots open as things currently stand. So, yeah, you'd have four plus a transfer if you do get a Jalen Coleman lands or someone else. But I would tend to think, you know, three, four is probably going to always kind of be the working number. It seems like it, regardless of what scholarships are open, you know, this one will probably be a bigger class again, one where they would take four or five guys. But at the same time, we've seen Chris Mack not afraid to go with 11 and not use all 13. So we'll have to see, but yeah, four sounds like a good number to me.
Me too.
I'm sorry, Snow, go ahead.
If Io wanted to come, I think they would take the right five, but I think four is the operative number.
Speaking of scholarships, do we have any updates on Kentrius Jones? Because obviously he's a commit and is considered part of this 2017 incoming class, but it seems like his eligibility is a little bit unclear at this moment. Do we have any updates on him?
I don't know about Rick, but I know I'm not hearing a whole ton of optimism.
The last I've heard is he's still expected to enroll in the summer. My guess is what it's going to be is similar to a Tyreek Jones situation like last year. Now, it may not work out as well as Tyreek's situation worked out, but I expect him to get on campus, be here for the summer, and then when it gets down to that fall semester and you're waiting for the NCAA clearinghouse to come through, we'll hear something again. That would be my guess, is we're not going to hear something for a while, and it's going to be one of those drawn-out processes with the NCAA. But yeah, I would tend to agree with Brian that there's not a ton of optimism from what I've heard. But Jared Ritter is the only recruit currently on campus because he graduated super early, so he came for the first summer semester. And I'm told that he's doing well. They really like his work ethic in the weight room. He's already put on 6 pounds since he's been there, so he's about 6'7", 210 pounds right now. Came in just over 200. So things are going well with that, I guess.
I can put on 6 pounds quicker than he can. It's just not going to be muscle.
Oh, I can lose 5 pounds in a day like it's nothing. It's unbelievable.
Okay, I think we all know it. That's just – no one needs to know about that.
That's a fact.
what do you, you're following that Richard Skinner Seven White Castles?
It's a cleanse, Dan. It's a cleanse. It's an organic cleanse. I think that's enough for this podcast. You've been listening to another edition of the Dana Victory Podcast, only available on MusketeerReport.com. For Dan and the legend Brian Snow, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.